you could be in a busy Starbucks with people all over the place and you just, you know, you thump in your ear and it's like, hey, you really got to go. I'm going to call you an Uber right now unless you tell me not to. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about iBoy. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
This is not a new Apple product.
for first-time parents. No, but before we do that, quick shout-out to Player FM for picking our last week's episode for their, I think it was their show of the week. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and they promoted it in social media and on their website. And what Player FM is a, you can think of it as sort of the podcast section of iTunes, but in the wild. And it's for a particular podcatcher application called Player FM that is, I believe, Android only. I should check that. But for a long time, it was my favorite Android podcatcher application. So if you're listening on Android, then you might want to check out Player FM, both the website, which is player.fm, and sort of like a crowdsourced popularity contest for podcasts. And you can listen online and all sorts of things. Pretty sure that the mobile app is Android only, but you can check.
Yeah, I think it used to, I know it used to be.
Yes, it definitely started off that way. And yes, it is Google Play. It says only Google Play. Okay, cool. So this is, they're Google snobs, which is why we love them. No chamfered edges. No chamfered edges over there.
No chamfered edges here.
Okay, so the starting point for this week's talk is a recently released Netflix original movie called iBoy, which we both agree is a silly title, but actually in the movie they do kind of goof on the title, so they were aware of it as well. But it's a, how would you describe the overall flick? Sort of a vigilante superhero vengeance pick?
Yeah, it's a sci-fi revenge flick, basically. Mm-hmm. Well, not just revenge, but
yeah, it's a little more. It's more to it than that. It's really
vigilante justice.
Yeah. I mean, you did like it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't amazing, but it was a fun, entertaining little hour and a half movie.
Yes. And good acting, good actors, actresses. I noticed you said you noticed some people from Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the lead is from Game of Thrones. Maybe that's not obvious, but the female lead is from Game of Thrones. And it was really good. I liked it. Very entertaining. And the music was unbelievable. So anyway, the reason why it's of interest is because without completely spoiling it, the protagonist ends up being able to connect to the network without any external devices. He ends up being able to kind of like be a cell phone.
Yeah, he gets some just sort of a mental connection to the network. And toward the end, kind of some almost telekinetic powers toward the end that were kind of stretching things a bit. But
they did stretch it at the end, I thought. But I kind of talked myself through that. And I was like, well, if we're talking about radio, he's projecting radio frequencies, obviously. I mean, that's how he would have to be in control of radio frequencies in mm-hmm. order to make any of this happen. And, you know, the sort of origin story of the superpowers is no more far-fetched than like Spider-Man.
Right. So, right. It's not stretching it any more than bit by a radioactive spider.
Right. It's close, but so the thing is though, the concept of, I'm so fascinated by this concept of the incredible bottleneck between our senses or our sensorium or whatever it is that thinks in our head.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by the bottleneck between that and the network.
Right, because we have to use some kind of keyboard or even voice input or something like that. And it's a lot slower and it's a lot less creative. I mean, I can think of a search query that I want to do or something maybe, but maybe it's hard to like vocalize or put into words, you know, within the context of what this interface will accept as to how to get that information.
Mm.
You know, I mean, And there were often times when I was doing more design work and more digital art, I was like, well, man, I wish I could just plug my brain in and this concept that I am envisioning would just appear because I'm not skilled enough to make it.
Right. Like, I don't know what to call this thing, this feeling, you know, but this is, it kind of reminds me, to draw an analogy, it kind of reminds me of trying to play guitar with thick gloves on or like mittens. That's like their normal experience of being connected to the internet. It's going to dramatically decrease your level of expression, you know, your ability to express your artistic tendencies such as they are. And if you take those mittens off all of a sudden, you're like, oh, wow, like this thing is so responsive. It's so it's so much closer to me being able to channel what's in me out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a one-way type of analogy. So like there's no input coming back in, really. I mean, there is, if you really want to get technical, you can feel the strings better and you're getting tactile input, but that's not what we're talking about here. The being able to connect to the internet and all of the not just the web, but all the things that are on the internet, every connected camera. And he's sort of, you know, you can imagine he's kind of becomes native digital and can sort of inherits some pretty far-fetched hacking ability. But let's just say that there was a little bit more AI in the wild than there probably really is. And you could just immediately, like you said, kind of just express a desire.
Mm-hmm.
And something figured it out, like how to do that. Like, I want these guys to stop harassing me. And so, and something, maybe it's inside of him, maybe it's not, maybe it's an external agent, then sends messages to their phones to distract them all simultaneously, or sends a power spike to the streetlights in the area, or controls the car that they're driving in to do something to, you know, stop them from chasing you or whatever. And it's a stretch. It's definitely a stretch. But the thing that blew my mind, or the thing that really caught my attention anyway, was the fact that he could do stuff. Let's just say he was doing stuff that anybody could do, sending text messages.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just sending text messages with his mind. Anybody can send text messages if they have a phone. But if someone is sending a text message, you can see them doing it. So if you can't see someone doing it, your assumption is that they didn't do it. So if you get a text message from someone you're talking to, it would be... So like you're talking to someone, you get a text message. You're going to know that it wasn't them that sent it because they're standing in front of you. You can see
right
they
did next to you.
Right. But what if you, could, it gives you a kind of superpower. You could be having an anonymous. So like you could be having two conversations with someone and they wouldn't know they were talking to the same person. So imagine what kinds of things you could do to trick people. I don't know. Just the fact that something about the secretive, like you're in public, but what you're doing is private. So it's like you're having thoughts that are being actuated in the real world. That's what it boils down to. Your thoughts are being actuated in the real world by radios and servos and vibration and all of these things. I mean, you're casting spells at that point.
Basically, yeah. Essentially, at that point, it transitions into like technomancy.
Right. There are situations in the movie that are not really that far-fetched, just sending text messages by thinking and being able to read, you know, being able to see text messages and respond to them without anybody knowing that that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was a scene where someone did recognize that he's like, what just happened? Like, I can tell by your expression that you're
kind of distracted. Yeah.
Yes. And there's nothing distracting here. So it's kind of like when someone's listening to a podcast or something and they're just checked out, probably like what's happened to you right now as your children are trying to get you to change their diaper or whatever.
Well, hopefully not that to that extent.
Yes. Well, hopefully your nose will kick in at that point. And so it really turns it turns into like, if it's unevenly distributed and only some people can do this,
those people are going to be at a huge advantage.
Huge advantage. Yeah. I mean, like the changing the throughput to the network and being able to just really interact with the web and Internet of Things in a...
efficient.
Yeah, just fluid. It's just like like a continuum between your brain and your desires and the information that you want, or perhaps the things that you want done. Just like think, order flowers. It's like Valentine's Day the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So order flowers and make a reservation at Chez Pascal. And you just think it, and then you get like...
And then it happens.
Yeah, and you get a confirmation in your mind.
Yeah, we're getting closer as voice computing gets better, but you still have to say it.
Right.
But it does feel like that's lowering the barrier.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's, to me, this is probably very far off in the future, but it's the frontier. Mm-hmm. The frontier is exactly like you just said. Voice, I am 100% confident that voice is going to be a major interface in the future because my kids already use it all the time.
Yeah.
And they're just completely normal. Maggie this morning was searching for videos by voice on the iPad.
Yeah, voice is going to become the way most people use the internet for most things.
Yes, I completely stand behind that. I would. Who knows how long it'll take? I was told it took forever for mobile payments to finally happen. I feel like it's kind of happened now. Mm-hmm. I see people paying with their phones all the time now. It's a regular occurrence. I do it all the time. I could actually go out of the house without my wallet now. There's almost nothing. There are many things that I might want to do that I can't do without my wallet, but there's pretty much one category, one retailer in every category. So like if I'm out, I just have my phone, I'm hungry, I can go to any Starbucks, I go to any Whole Foods, I can go to, there's just a bunch of stores around
right.
us.
Right, that might not be your ideal choice, but you have options for pretty much everything.
Right, they don't take it everywhere, but there's one of everyone that takes it, if you see what I mean. It's like I can get gas at certain places, I can get food and drinks, and you know, I can get by with just my phone. I did bet that the year of mobile payments, I probably said that every year for the past 3 years.
Yeah, I think so.
This is the year. And
you may have started in 2012, 2013.
Probably. I certainly in 2011 after the Starbucks thing, I was like, people are ready to pay with their phones. Mm-hmm. They want to. They're willing to do it. And I mean, Starbucks proved it. And they were smart because they used a technology that was already there instead of having to wait around for everyone and their mother to adopt NFC and get that into the devices and then get terminals at this, all the retailers and take forever. Anyway, things take longer than I typically, I'm overly optimistic on my timelines. I recognize that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're about anywhere from 3 to 5 years optimistic.
Yeah, I'm so ahead of the curve. Check me out. But voice, you know, I'm trying to be a little bit more realistic, but voice computing is showing real signs of life. Echoes, I see lots of normal people with Amazon Echoes. It was a very popular Christmas present, our holiday gift. It's one of, I think it's the highest selling piece of technology on Amazon, which, you know, but the millions have been sold. So it's not anywhere near like smartphones or anything, but millions have been sold. It's really good at what it does. And it's just very natural. You know, the interfaces on iPads and iPhones and other tablets and phones, of course, that voice computing interface is very, very natural in a lot of situations. It, you know, mostly around the house, in my opinion, it's not the kind of thing I tend to do when I'm out and about because it's potentially annoying to other people.
Yeah, there have been times where I've been walking around and I've had to catch myself from saying, Alexa, what time is it? Or
oh, yeah. Alexa, what's the weather today? Like, is it going to rain?
Yeah.
It's an example of a different, a lower level of friction, way lower level of friction.
Yeah, I mean, much lower.
When you see a three-year-old computing.
Searching for stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, way lower level of friction. And there's a, but then still you get to this huge barrier, like, how do you, what's the next level down? What's the next, I think the next level, I just don't see gestures. I've tried gesture, like, you know, hands-free gesture stuff. Like,
yeah, I don't see it catching on.
It's
too
not,
much work.
Yeah. There's no natural gesture for any of that stuff.
Yeah. None of that is stuff that you would just naturally do. There's no natural gesture for search the web for the nearest Thai place.
Mm-hmm.
I think the next step is voice computing, but it's voice computing that's mobile and that's maybe a little thing that sits in your ear and you just kind of sub-vocalize what you want to do and it whispers in your ear.
That's kind of where I'm going with it too. And I know we've talked about this ad nauseum in the past, but Apple actually did come out with the thing that we predicted years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the new AirPods are that. And, you know, they're still tethered to a phone, but they're wireless. You can talk to them. Siri kind of stinks, but you can see they're assembling the pieces.
Yeah.
And the sub-vocalization thing is that to me is the potential, because when you hear people read about, I mean, if people don't know what that is, it's kind of like when you're thinking about saying things, your anatomy responds, even if you don't make the sounds, your anatomy responds in a way that can be detected by sensors with some degree of accuracy.
Yeah, it's almost like you're just kind of mumbling it or whispering it to yourself sort
right.
of thing.
Right.
Just something we subconsciously do, I guess.
It's almost like moving your lips when you read,
mm-hmm.
type of thing. It's not quite the same thing, but it's sort of the concept. So it's like, okay, if that were true, then you could, it would cut down a lot on the noise interference in public in terms of picking up what you're trying to say, which is a major problem with voice computing. If it's windy or you're in a crowded room, it's really hard to make it work. You need to be in certain sort of isolated in a way, or at least in a quiet place.
Yeah, and it would make it a lot less distracting to others and a lot less obvious to others.
I mean, I think it's funny that we're worried about this when, you know, 10, 15 years ago, everybody and their brother was talking on the phone everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, in the flip phone era, everybody had a phone glued to their face and was just all the way, always talking. Everybody
always talking, yeah. Now they're always texting.
Now they're always texting, right. Like, quiet cars in the train used to be a huge deal. Mm-hmm. I suppose they still are because people hang out and actually talk in real life, like savages. But well, so that is one possible direction. Is there, like, what's another way? I mean, there's some, like, brainwave stuff that is, but that's so far off. Like, even I'm not thinking, like,
yeah, that's kind of far off. And I mean, you're starting to see stuff like that get more practical applications in the world of, say, like maybe prosthetics and controlling a limb. But even that seems way, way simpler than, you know, transmitting a thought to the internet. But I don't know, maybe something's gonna progress from that. Who knows? But it's not gonna happen within the next 3 to 5 years.
No, the thing that'll happen before that is predictive search. Mm-hmm. So what that would look like, and this doesn't, okay, no, this could, I'm trying to think of, like, if it's just input or if it's output. So you could have predictive search where you've got the device in your ear, it's, or wherever, and you've got.
Yeah, it's lunchtime, you're downtown. It says, oh, hey, you know, these are the restaurants you might be interested in or something.
Right. But instead of a text message, it's just telling you, it's like, hey. You know, it like thumps like an Apple Watch does and to get your attention. And you're like, yeah, you don't say anything, but you just pay attention. And it's like, you know, you express interest in that. And if the assistant, call it, is really good. So like if the AI is really good and relevant, it is not annoying you. It's sensitive to your location. It knows whether or not you're talking to someone. It's not going to interrupt. It knows where your interests are. It knows where your friends are relative to you currently.
Like, hey, you know, last night you said you wanted Chinese food. John's over here at this restaurant that's a block away. Mm-hmm. This Chinese restaurant that's a block away. If you want to join, you kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah. And that's maybe. And that's. I mean, if that sounds contrived, I suppose it's almost hard to imagine what the serendipity could be. But I mean, if you imagine, I've got. Let's say for people who have a spouse, let's say, or a close friend, imagine that you guys are you got your headset on, your phone's on, your earbuds are in, and your spouse or whatever, your friend is sitting at home at a computer, just hanging out like the FBI van scenario. And you're walking around with your normal phone. They could easily see where you are on a map. They could have access to your calendar. They could have access to your contacts. Potentially,
all things we can do now.
Yep, get you a car. They could make your reservations. They can look at your to-do list. They can look at I think I said calendar, your schedule for the day, and they could just sit there and be helpful. Don't say anything. Yeah. I don't, you know. So you confuse you and me, right? I'm out and about, and you're like, hey, let's do an experiment. I'm gonna be your. Like whatever, like, you know,
your silent little personal assistant for the day.
Yeah, Siri, right? And so you K-bot. And you're just watching me on a map. And like 95% of the day, you wouldn't be saying anything. But then every once in a while, you'd be like, you know, you've got a gap in your calendar right here. And you're supposed to make an appointment for the eye doctor. I see the phone number here. Do you want me to do it for you?
Or
you don't even need the gap in the calendar at that point. I was going to say, why don't you do it now? But then I was like, well, K-Bot could just do it. So
yeah.
My point is that the skepticism around the perhaps strenuous or contrived examples that we've come up with so far has a lot to do with the fact that there isn't an AI right now that's that good.
Yeah.
But you could totally imagine it would not be cost effective to pay someone to just sit in your ear like that and Google things for you while you're walking around.
No, but I could totally see, you know, once AIs get a little better, if I'm, you know, I'm sitting at my house and I need to be somewhere in 30 minutes, like, okay, the AI is going to call a vehicle for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Google Now almost does that. Google Now will tell you, will monitor your calendar and mm-hmm. where you need to be and the traffic, and it'll tell you to leave early. It'll proactively tell you that you should leave early. It's so easy to imagine it just saying, hey, I'm calling you an Uber. You got to get going. And you're not even, and then you could like say, no, I changed my mind. Or, you know, you could cancel it perhaps, but it's okay. You don't have to do anything. You know, it wouldn't be, you could be in a busy Starbucks with people all over the place and you're just, you know, you thump in your ear and it's like, hey, you really got to go. I'm going to call you an Uber right now unless you tell me not to. And
yeah, that seems like something we could do now.
Yeah. I mean, if Uber wasn't working on that, I'd be shocked. Like notifications that are like, hey, every day, because I've been taking, it's totally horrible weather. I mean, the conditions outside my office currently are just very icy and snowy. I like to walk to work, but it's not been feasible. Mm-hmm. So I've been taking Ubers home, especially at night because it's dark. I can't, you know, it's hard to see. It's really easy to slip. Cars everywhere. So I've been calling Ubers on a very regular schedule. It's so easy to imagine getting a push notification from the app today at, you know, 4:15. Say, hey, you've got karate tonight. Do you want me to send a car like usual? Yes or no?
Yeah.
And I suppose that's the direction it'll go, where you get, because the IO friction, it's really hard to imagine it taking a quantum leap anytime in the next decade. Voice will be the biggest.
Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get little chips to implant in our heads that are going to give us direct access to the internet, even though I've been wanting that since I was probably 7. But although I don't think the internet was a thing then. Anyway,
I was going to say.
I still wanted it.
I wish there was a global superintelligence. I wish there was a library of all the humans' knowledge. I had the reverse. Like, I wish I didn't have to carry all these dimes to photocopy books at the library and then write, you know.
Yeah.
But so my wish would have been, you know, photocopy should be free, not we should create an internet. So not as much of a futurist as I'd like to consider myself. Faster horses.
Yeah. Free photocopies is still a good dream.
So anyway, we don't need to belabor the point. I think the movie was super fun. I don't think we ruined it. It's not going to win any awards, I don't think, but it's definitely entertaining.
Yeah.
And I just think it did a great job of kind of painting a sci-fi picture of exploring that frontier where the IO bottleneck is completely gone and the web does in a very real sense becomes part of your brain. It becomes your knowledge. It's not just like reference material. Yeah. And then obviously you fight bad guys. So
that's totally what everyone would do.
Totally.
Well, he had reason to. There were motivations for him too, though.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, God, I mean, it's like when you think about all the cameras, we talked about cameras on a recent episode. When you think about all the cameras and being able to like see them all, like get access to, you know, kind of like filter, find the needle in the haystack and put your eyeballs, not anywhere, but in a lot of places.
Everybody's cell phone, everybody's laptop webcam, every security camera, network security camera. Yeah. All those Nest cams everywhere.
Yeah. All of a sudden you get access to this amount of data that you could never process normally because it would just be, you'd never find the needle in the haystack. But if mm-hmm. that was solved, it's like, well, the eyeballs are out there. The problem is like getting access to the eyeballs and then filtering the information, which is, not, I would say that like it's not a small problem.
Yeah. It's like Torchwood in your head.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Torchwood?
I did, but I don't remember the reference.
Oh, they had a huge surveillance, like tapped into the surveillance system and things. So.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another show. So, since we're recommending shows, the Sawyer from Lost starred in sort of a, I don't know his name, but the actor's name. But he starred in it's sort of Limitless type of show where he's a CIA mm-hmm. agent who's same sort of thing. He can like tap into all of the government networks and cameras and satellites and all sorts of things. And it creates it creates superpowers. I mean, like if all of a sudden you could do like a not an MRI, but like an X-ray of a minefield, like, oh, I gotta go across this minefield. No problem. Call, you know, just call it, like, closes his eyes, like, calls up a satellite image of the place, sees a heat map. Oh, well, okay, I can see myself on the map. I can clearly see through the ground.
See where the mines are.
See where the mines are and just walk around and follow me, you know.
Yep.
It's superhuman. You really are. So, very cool. All right. We could probably leave it there.
Yeah, it's probably a good place to wrap it up.
Yeah. So, a couple of show recommendations for you.
Something a little lighter than the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. All right. That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to see Kelly and I in your inbox once a week? Get new episodes delivered straight to you with show notes, links to additional content, and much, much more. Oh, so much more. Plus, you can reply to any message to suggest topics for future episodes. So to get the inside track, go to terrifyingrobotdog.com and look for the button that says Keep Me in the Loop. Hope to see you there.